Good morning. The next case is 30 Metropolitan Place versus Dana Partnership. Counsel, you may approach.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, my name is Tom Culhane. I appear here today representing Dana Partnership and Arun Agarwal, the defendants in this underlying case. This case is a breach of lease case on its face, but it's not a garden variety breach of lease case. It's part of a broader business dispute between a number of individuals who came together several years ago to form a company called Clarity Development. It's also, to some extent, a cautionary tale about doing business with your attorneys outside the legal realm. The defendants in this case were represented by a man by the name of Thomas McClay for many years. They were also represented, Dana was, by Niraj Agarwal. Niraj was the cousin of Dana, of Arun Agarwal and the in-house counsel at Dana. Back when he was in that capacity, Dana purchased some land up in North Omaha, the site of the old Caniglia's restaurant up there, across from Fort Omaha, with the idea of developing that into a mixed-use facility with the use of some tax financing, basically, that you get for having making available low-income rental property. Now, in about 2015-14, the testimony from Mr. Arun Agarwal was that he was approached by McClay and his about forming a development company, Clarity Development. Mr. McClay would be in control of that. Mr. Agarwal would have a high percentage, which he then gave part of to his nephew. And at the end of the day, it ended up that entity, Clarity Development, was going to assist in the development of this project, which came to be known as 30 Metro, which is the plaintiff in this case. Now, Dana originally had purchased the property through an entity called 5319 North LLC. They formed that entity way back in 2013 or 14, and it was owned 100% by Dana.
And that's the owner of the land, right?
Pardon me?
The owner of the land.
The owner of the land.
Not the building.
5319 North LLC, that's correct. They would eventually be the owner of the building if this had come through fruition. But
that would be after the 15 or 16 years passed.
That's correct, Your Honor. I don't understand why it's set up that way, but essentially the tax investment advisor is the owner of the land, or owner of the, during the term of the mortgage, for want of a better term, which in this case was 15 years.
And counsel, I appreciate that you've laid out the parties, and
right.
I have my little spreadsheet, you know, that I had to draw, but I guess, you know, I'm trying to get to the bottom line here.
Okay.
And my question is, and perhaps it's too simplistic, but what excuses Dana Partnership from paying rent to 30 Metro Place?
Well, Your Honor, nothing excuses the payment of the rent. And in fact, our position is that that rent was paid. The way this thing came about, I guess, for want of a better term, was that just before the closing of this, in fact, 2 weeks before the closing, Dana transferred 10% of 5319 North to Clarity under the control of Mr. McClay, and Clarity then became the manager of 30 Metro under the terms of that amended operating agreement for 5319 North. A week after that, it became clear that there was not going to be funds available from the closing proceeds to pay money to Clarity. Mr. McClay approached Dana and said, I want that money. Dana said, fine, we'll buy back the 10%, $200,000. That's just, you know, and then from that point on then, Dana would have been in control of 5319 North, which was in control of 30 Metro.
Still doesn't excuse not paying rent.
But I'm hopefully getting to that.
Sure. That was a pause. That wasn't the finished answer,
okay.
Right?
Okay.
That's the elephant in the room.
It is the elephant in the room, but I think all of this is very important to understand the background on this, because what happens next is Mr. McClay says, we're not going to paper that now. We're not going to, because we don't want to mess up the closing. You know, the closing's booked.
That was my question. The two things that you said happened 2 weeks and 1 week ahead, that was not reduced to writing.
It was not reduced. Well, the first one was.
Okay.
The second one wasn't, at Mr. McClay's insistence, that it would screw up the closing, if they did. Arun, relying on his attorney of many years to, in fact, paper the deal afterwards, said, fine. They went ahead with it. It's clear from, I think, the evidence, you know, one thing you can look at is the 4 months afterwards, the correspondence between Naraj Agarwal and the accountants, that everybody understood that 5319 North was 100% owned by Dana. But then when this broader dispute arose, all of a sudden, now this is a way that we can get into this. Now what happened was actually 30 Metro was under the control of Dana for all practical purposes. From that point until this broader dispute arose, the parties intended that can be seen from the lease itself. It was actually signed for 30 Metro by Arun Agarwal, and it was signed for Dana by Arun Agarwal. And from that point on, the parties worked together on this for a period of time. For example, the lease provided for payments to start on January 1st of 2018. But in fact, the building was late in getting delivered. And because it was late in getting delivered, Dana could not rent the commercial space until they had the building to work with. And it was agreed by everybody that it would be pushed on down the road. Now, that wasn't committed to writing, no question about it. But there is Exhibit 74 from the gentleman helped build the project at the request of Clarity. It's clear from that everybody understood it wasn't going to start paying rent until it was, quote, CO'd, which makes sense from a commercial perspective also. That is, in fact, what happened. Now,
wasn't actually the rent supposed to start sooner than January 1st?
I think it originally was, and then there was an amendment to the lease.
And then they amended it to January 1st.
Because it was clear they weren't going to be able to deliver the property at that point in time. But the point is that from that point on to the time that they started having this broader business dispute, everybody assumed that Arun Agarwal and Dana were running this project. And that's
okay,
what they
so
did.
If Dana is 100% owner of 5319, I'm still not getting the connection. How does that excuse Dana from paying rent to 30 Metro?
Well, it in fact did pay rent. They're claiming that it couldn't pay it into this account that only Dana controlled. In fact, the whole purpose of paying the rent, obviously, was to fund the project. And that's where we get into this fund the payment of the bond and the operation of the business. And in fact, what they did was set up a system where Arun paid off the bonds when they were due, paid the rent when it was due, paid not the rent on the building, but paid the operating expenses when they were due. All that was taken care of through this informal arrangement that we describe in great detail in brief.
And was that an informal arrangement agreed to by R4?
It wasn't, Your Honor.
Because they're ultimately who's getting 99% of this money, right?
You bet, Your Honor. But I will point out that in Mr. Doble's testimony, he testified that R4 didn't really care who was running the project, and that if they had been asked to approve a change in management from what the document showed at the time of closing, they would have done it.
But so, they didn't do it.
Well, because they weren't asked, because the other side here refused to go ahead and paper the deal that was arrived at.
I know you're into your rebuttal time. So we're dealing here not with a jury trial, but with a bench trial.
That's correct.
And I assume you laid all of this out to Judge Lux, and he obviously had credibility problems with some of your people, and he made a finding, and so, you know, where is the abuse of discretion,
I guess? Well, Your Honor, I would the credibility findings I should probably say are addressed at length in the brief. His basic two things he found: he signed documents under titles that he didn't have. Those documents were prepared by the very attorneys that represented him. He doesn't make those judgments. He's shown where to sign, and he signs them. And that's what he testified to. I think the central focus here or should be that Mr. McClay, Naraj Agarwal, were at trial. Neither took the stand to rebut any of the testimony that Arun Agarwal gave. on this overall transaction and how interwoven it was. I know I'm running out of time. I would ask the court, we did address at great length in the briefs our approach on damages, and we think under the damages there really is nothing left to award here. I'd ask the court to reverse this judgment and, point out that if you don't really, my clients are out, not just the $200,000 they paid at closing, they're out the, Clarity, they're out the $188,000 they advanced by paying all these expenses that would have come out of the lease, funds, and then whatever judgment is rendered in this case, which I think would be grossly unfair.
Thank you,
Your Honor.
Good morning, counsel.
Good morning. May it please this honorable court, Greg Scaglione and Kendra Vossler from Coatley Jessen appearing on behalf of the appellee. I'd like to start out with just a brief overview of the facts here, which I think get to the crux of the issue of the payment of rent. This building had on the first level, commercial development, and then above it was, it's called mixed use, is residential apartments. So we're really talking about that first level. So when 30 Metro was constructed, it had a master lease for the first level to Dana. Dana then sublet out each of those commercial bays to various commercial subtenants. Dana collected the rent from all of those subtenants. It was then supposed to remit its rent under the master lease up to 30 Metro. So to be clear here, and this is one thing I think Judge Lutz struggled with, is how could Dana collect rent from the subtenants and then not pay its landlord under the master lease, which it refused to do? And it is really that simple. The lease is clear. The guarantee is clear. Those are to be paid. The CFO for Dana prepared a spreadsheet where she listed out the unpaid rent for each month from January 1st of 2018 to date. So by their own admission, the rent was accruing and not being paid, and yet they were collecting the rent from the subtenants. I think this is difficult to justify. So at the end of the day, this is simply a non-payment. When I look through the various assignments of errors here, other than standing, these are all asking you to reweigh the evidence. This was not a runaway jury. This is not a question of poor jury instructions. This was a bench trial that was heavily briefed before, and then proposed findings of fact and conclusions of law submitted after the trial. Judge Lutz took extensive notes, paid careful attention, and wrote a very lengthy opinion on this case. He not only commented on the content of the testimony, which he cited in his order, he also commented at T28 on the demeanor of Arun Agarwal on the stand. And it's extraordinary in my practice, at least, to see such specific findings of lack of credibility in a judgment. I've not seen that very often. But Judge Lutz felt it compelling to note that the demeanor and the words and the, quite frankly, unjustified actions that were taken in light of admissions that the rent was due, I think caused him to make those findings. I think another stunning example of lack of credibility here is they're saying, once I sent a demand letter on behalf of R4 and 30 Metro saying we demand the rent be paid and we're giving you a new address to send the rent to, when I sent that letter, within days, they went to a bank and set up an account in 30 Metro, certified under penalties of federal law, that he was the manager of 30 Metro, which he was not, and he opened up an account, and then they then put over $200,000 into that account. The one and only person who had access to that account was Arun Agarwal. Not even his CFO had withdrawal authority from that account. So 30 Metro had its own account at Dundee Bank. That's where its funds were supposed to go into so that it could pay its various obligations. That's the only account that R4 approved for monies to go into. And they went and set up a secret account after the demand was issued. That's key. So I think Judge Lutz's finding of unjustified actions and lack of credibility were well warranted, and their invitation for you to reweigh the evidence without having seen the demeanor of Arun Agarwal is not the appropriate standard of review.
You mentioned the account that was set up within days after the demand letter, and that was Mutual of Omaha?
It was, and now Citibank.
Okay. Was there a request for that relief at trial?
There was. The way Judge Lutz runs his trials is he asks for an opening statement in writing, and then he asks us to tell him the operative agreements, I'm sorry, the operative pleadings, and the controverted and uncontroverted facts, and then he asks for a specific concrete request for relief. And in that specific concrete request for relief, I had asked that the money that was set aside, which they claim was set aside to pay rent, I just simply said, well, let's do what they say they intended it for and apply it to the rent. So he came up with the relief that he would have the monies transferred to the Dundee bank account, and I would have to enter a partial satisfaction of judgment so they would get credit. And that's where that request, and I think the relief came from.
And then there was evidence to support what you're saying were the facts
very
at
much,
trial?
Yes. We
about
had,
that account?
We had the opening documents. We had the corporate resolution that was fraudulently signed by Arun Agarwal as the manager of 30 Metro. That's a fraud. We also have the account, the bank account balances, which shows the amount. And Judge Lutz simply took that amount from the last most recent statement and said, whatever's in the account, transfer it over, and Greg, you and your client credit it against the judgment. There was some comments, I believe, that are well outside the record by counsel that I would just like to note. The issues of Neeraj Agarwal representing Dana and the issues of Tom McClay representing Dana are not in the record before you. They're not in the pleadings before you. And I think it was improper for him to bring that up. That is well outside the records. It has nothing to do with any of the assignments of error, and it is greatly contested. Those issues are currently being addressed by Judge Wheelock. They were not in front of Judge Lutz.
Counsel, in regards to all the, I think the parties stipulated at the end of the trial that the court could take judicial notice, I believe, of four or maybe five other lawsuits. I'm taking it, you don't believe any of these representations would be revealed by that information.
Well,
by that judicial notice of those files.
For this court, I think the request was judicial notice that there are some cases out there and there's a more global dispute. I believe that's what Judge Lutz took notice of. If they wanted Judge Lutz to take judicial notice of specific pleadings and issues, they should have marked those and put those in front of Judge Lutz and said, take judicial notice of these allegations or take judicial notice of this affidavit in this
so
other court.
So you're saying that the request for judicial notice is just these things are out?
Exactly. He, in opening statements, he went into details that are well off the record, were not specifically judicially noticed, and are hotly contested. The only question of law, I think, that's before the court is standing. And standing, as we noted in our brief, is there title or ownership by 30 Metro in the relief sought. It's established by the contract. The contract says the rent will be paid to 30 Metro. They admitted they owed the rent. They just claimed they paid it through a different way. So standing is proved. The owner of the rent, the person contractually entitled to, is 30 Metro. So we had standing. Everything else is an attack on the sufficiency of the evidence of our burden of proof, or an attack on the trial judge rejecting their affirmative defenses. Those are all just weighing the evidence, some of which you must weigh de novo, although discretion to Judge Lutz. Others you just weigh on the record, you find evidence to support. Most of the evidence was unconflicting. There was one or two pieces of evidence that were in conflict, and Judge Lutz resolved those in our favor. So this court's review would be to simply find the evidence, which we cited in our briefs, where it's at in the record. If it's there, and it is, you should affirm.
Counsel, I have a question regarding your request for prejudgment interest.
Yes, sir.
No notice of default went out until well after rent was not, rent that was due was not being paid.
Right.
How is it that you, well, and then under the lease, there was a 30-day period to cure. Is that correct?
Correct.
Now, what's your interpretation of that 30 days to cure? Does that include interest, or does that just include the principal amount of rent that was due?
So the lease says rents due for base and rents due for additional rent. Then later in the lease, as I cited, it says all other rights in equity or law, those are cumulative and reserved. One of the legal remedies that was preserved is our legal right to prejudgment interest under NBRF Stat 45-104. NBRF Stat Section 45-104 does not require a default. It requires that the amount was due. There's actually four bases under 45-104. One is money due on a written instrument. We have that. It doesn't say default. It says money due. Another one is an account balance, settling up on an account balance. The other is money received or retained without our consent. That would be the money at the bank, as well as money loaned or due and withheld by unreasonable delay. So the lease said that the rent is due on this date, and we calculated past the cure period for each month. Once that cure period was relieved, we calculated interest from that date. That's when it was due under a written instrument. So I believe that triggered the prejudgment interest, and Judge Lutz agreed. I believe there's contractual basis and legal basis for that.
But your demand notice, your default notice, excuse me, did that include an amount for prejudgment interest, or was that just the principal rent?
I'm not going to guess. I didn't refresh on that particular issue. I believe what I normally put in those letters is this is due plus, and I list other things in general categories, expecting if they intend to pay to call for a payoff. Certainly the complaint mentioned both prejudgment interest and cost.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appellant had used all of his time, is that correct? How far did we take Appellee's counsel over?
1 minute, 25 seconds.
You'd like 1 minute, 25 for rebuttal, Mr. Colhane? Mm-hmm.
Glad you brought up the prejudgment interest issue. I intended to get to that, too. I do believe that the prejudgment interest doesn't start until there has been a default in the notice of cure period. And that did not occur for over, well, it occurred in February of 2020. Their alleged lease payments should have begun in January of 21, and I think there's that AV, can't remember the Genesis case that we cite in the brief for that proposition. With regard to going beyond the record, I apologize if I did that. The court has access to that record. I don't think I did. I think the relationship between Mr. McClay and Neeraj Agarwal and Dana and Arun Agarwal was discussed at length, or at least certainly substantially, in Mr. Agarwal's testimony, where he was laying foundation talking about how clarity came into being and how they all knew each other. So I don't believe I went beyond the record on that.
That being said, I mean, we have this suit.
What's that?
We have this lawsuit in front of us.
That's correct.
Not five others. Maybe they'll be coming our way at some point in the future.
But. May well be, Your Honor. May well be. That is
but
correct.
We're trying to resolve this between 30 Metro. Yeah. Dana.
Right, I agree. And I think, at the end of the day, the damage issue is important because I think that they are entitled to credit for the $188,000 that apparently nobody disputes was paid, that 30 Metro would have had to pay had it not come from Dana. Pay to discharge the debt and pay. And that's, I appreciate the extra time.
Thank you both. Thank you all for being here. We will take the matter under advisement and your excuse. Thank you.
Thank you.